let you know.
Well, thank you so very much, Linda, for giving us this opportunity to talk about a part of your life in the grain trade. In any case, let's start by my asking you to give your name.
I'm Linda Mitten. I used to be Linda Vester. There was a whole slew of us in Kern River.
Right. Well, we'll get into that. In fact, I ran across the Vester name somewhere or other the other day. Where was that? And then you could describe perhaps how, you know, let me see, we want your place and date of birth on the tape as well. So,
I was born in Port Arthur then, and the old General Hospital, with a twin sister.
Oh, yes.
The youngest of nine, yeah.
That's interesting, too.
We grew up looking at the elevators.
And the date of birth then in there as well?
Our birthday was April the 2nd. We had to go all the way around to get to April the 1st, so we're the least from being fools.
And this was in what year then?
Oh, that was 1947.
Right. Well, thank you very much for that information. And so you were living, you came into Current River, which is a very distinctive community in our city, and you were the two of you were numbers 8 and 9.
We were number 8 and 9.
In a family.
And mm-hmm. We got spoiled rotten.
You want to tell us something about your family? And
We were 8 and 9, and we did get spoiled. The others were much older when we were born, so now we do the payback. We look after. Actually, there's only 4 of us left. But the others, some moved away and ended up, I was the last one at home, and nobody else was here. Right. But now I have a brother here. He was a former OPP, but he's retired.
Oh, yes. And your father's name was?
Lloyd Nelson Vester.
Vester.
And he worked at the United Grain Growers. He was the master electrician.
Okay.
And when we would go out in the car, we would go past the grain growers. And lordy, lordy, if there was a light out, we had to drive in. And he had to make sure that light was fixed. So we should just pray that all the lights were on. But
so he was meticulous in maintaining the electrical part of the elevator.
Oh, yes, yes.
He worked there all of his life then, I suppose?
Yes. He died at an early age, 59.
Oh, no.
He came home from work and he was just kind of blue and went up to bed. And my mom called the ambulance and he went, and the next day he passed away.
Yeah.
But while he was working there, he used to have to wear two pairs of overalls because I was a really sickly, puny kid. My sister was 6 pounds, I was 3, and I had asthma and pneumonia all the time. So he'd have to wear 2 pairs of overalls and strip down when he came home.
Yeah.
Must have been uncomfortable for him.
Right. Yes, conditions in the elevators. Well, what got you into the elevator, into the grain trade for a little while?
I always loved the elevators. I thought they were neat to look at. My brother also worked there. He was a millwright. But I remember that explosion. Do you remember that, when the elevator fell into the lake?
I don't. I've heard of about it.
It was the grain growers where my dad worked.
I see.
And the tidal washed out the sheds that were there. I was really afraid that he'd been in there, but nobody was there. But
you were on the brink of a question early on.
Were you alive at that time?
Oh, yes.
So it'd be 53, maybe?
Around there.
Yeah.
So you would have been about 6 years old when it happened.
Yeah,
and this was the one near your port ship? Near the shipyard, is it? Is that the...
The shipyard.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right. Because the tidal wave washed into the shipyard as well, I guess, did it?
Yes.
Yes.
It was really something. So thereafter, I was kind of scared that he would get mm-hmm. killed at work or something, but...
Yes. What did they do with the elevator? Were they able to erase it up again?
They did. They did somehow. They rebuilt it. I mean, they had to get all that concrete out of there. But the gases in there were terrible. It was the gases, I guess, that made it explode.
It was actually an explosion, was it, that led to
it
the...
just blew out the side, one bin, one side.
Boy.
Yeah. And when I remember growing up in high school, in grade school, in Current River School, that was now Claude Garton School, but in our textbooks, seeing colored pictures of the elevators at the Lakehead, we used to call us, and saying they were the world's biggest, busiest elevators. And I used to be so proud of that because my father and my brother worked there, you know.
Yes.
So I thought it was great.
Were there a lot of other children who could boast of the same thing? Were there a lot of employees of the grain elevators in Current River?
Yes. Yes. There were. Mm-hmm.
So it was...
Yeah. A lot of them used to walk with their lunch.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, we had trolley buses.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't go all the way to the grain growers. There was a loop they used to turn around at. But so a lot of the guys would walk it.
Right.
I remember that.
Yeah. Would the loop be just short of the Current River?
You know where the baseball... A diamond is, and where the fishery is, right where that rock cliff is, right past that, there was a big loop where the buses would turn around and go Fort William, Port Arthur.
Okay, so it's right. It's just beyond beyond the river, then where that diamond is, and where this road into Port Chip and the provincial mill, and so on and so forth. And that's where it did the turnaround, right? So one spring, or end of school one year, an interesting opportunity comes your way, I understand.
Yes, yes. I had just finished grade 10 and thought, woo, summer holidays. And I got a phone call from the commercial director at Lakeview. And he said, Linda, have you got a job for the summer? And I said, no, I don't. I hadn't planned on looking for one either. And he said... well, how would you like a job at Richardson Elevator? And I had to stop and think. I said, well, I can't do that, Mr. Westbrook. And he said, what do you mean you can't do that? I said, well, I'm too little. He said, what do you mean you're too little? I said, well, I'm only 5'2" and 105 pounds. And he says, so what? I said, well, I can't shovel grain. He says, they don't want you to shovel grain. He says, what have I trained you to do? And I said, oh, a secretarial? He said, yes. And I says, but there's no offices in there. He says, yes, there is. They called from there, and they said they want a girl. So do you want to go down and take a look and see? I said, okay, but there's no office there. So I go and walk down this long pier. All these foxes come out. They're chasing me along this long pier. And a big salty had come in. Oh, the smell of those salties, the fermentation of the wheat on the decks. Oh, it made me nauseous. So it's a really long pier. And then I see a handrail stick out. I look up and there's a little tiny office. There's two windows. So he was right. There was an office there. But, you know, just recently I talked to somebody. In fact, one of the fellows that worked in the office with me. And I asked him about that. I said, I don't remember there being offices in the grain grower. And that. He said, most of the other elevators had their offices downtown in buildings. So I had a reason to doubt. But so, I went, I took the job, and it was great fun.
Right. Well, you'll tell us about it.
Well, I typed all the boxcars, you know, those crazy numbers on the boxcars. I had to type all those numbers, and those numbers tell you what the cargo is in the container. And
did you do a sheet for each of the cars, or were they lists?
One long list.
A list.
Yeah.
A page for every day, or for the
every
group,
day
group
every
of cars.
Day. Every day, everything that was unloaded that day would come in.
It would be on one cheater, if it fitted on the on
yeah.
the page,
mm-hmm.
and it was the number and then the information about it as well, or did you...
Yes, what was in it, the cargo, sometimes
right.
ore, or flax, or barley, or wheat.
Yes.
It was mostly wheat.
And what were you working from in terms of typing these lines of information about each of the cars?
Oh, they must have given it to me. I don't remember that. But I just remembered I got a lot of practice typing numbers. I wasn't good at it before that.
So the numbers would be what, 5 or 6 digits long, or even longer
no,
than that?
No, about 10 or 12.
10 or 12
and
digits.
And they'd have letters mixed in with the numbers.
Sure.
You know, it was, you had to pay attention.
I'm just wondering for what you would have been working. They surely weren't reading them off the car. Were there cards that came in or something?
I can't remember that
yeah.
part.
Because your eyes were focused on what you were.
At the end of the day, I had to sit down with one of the fellows and had to go over this big sheet I had typed during the day and learned a new way of counting. Instead of saying 15 or 50, we'd say fifty. Instead of saying 16, sixty. So you didn't get the numbers mixed up.
So
that was fun.
Fifty and 50 were two
yeah.
different.
So you didn't get it mixed up.
Right.
Fifty, sixty, seventy.
And the tie was the
yeah.
substituting for the teen, as we would
yeah.
say 15, but when
no, it was substituting for 70.
Oh, I see the other
70.
One. So 15 and fifty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
You're actually just sounding the last two letters,
mm-hmm.
aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Or sounding them as two Y's.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And
mm-hmm.
so they were on sheets. I was envisioning eight and a half by eleven, but these were
no. It was a big sheet. It must have been a different typewriter. And so
yeah, was,
we had to go through this and read all this information at the end of the day, check it out, make sure there are no mistakes.
Do you remember the person who was checking it with you? Was he looking at something or other too as you read the numbers off to him? Or because he would presumably have what it
I remember we had a big ruler going
sure.
number by number. I don't remember what he was reading from now.
Yeah. This is interesting. The very first person we interviewed was Roy L'Amour, who has been active with Legion Branch 5 for years.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I first got to know him. But he worked for CP Rail at the Roslyn Yards, where they were recording and, I guess, passing on information about each of the cars,
mm-hmm.
and what was in it and so on. And so I'm assuming that that would have been the raw material from which then
maybe.
The record was being made up.
Perhaps.
for Richardson's.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't take all day to type that up, I don't suppose.
No, I did other things too.
Yes, what other sorts
of
things did you do?
Reports, typed in letters, the manager, the office manager, Mr. Hollingsworth. I don't know if he's still alive or not. He was very nice. They were all really nice. I got spoiled rotten. I was the only girl. So everybody going out at lunch would stop by, Linda, you want anything? We're going to Dairy Queen. And oh, it was great.
Yeah. Yeah, it must have been quite something to be a grade 10 student. So you'd be about 16 or so. Were you
yeah.
just 16? And
uh-huh.
all these. How many men worked in the office?
In the office, see.
Mr. Hollingsworth, obviously.
Mr. Hollingsworth, Peter Stark, Groombridge, Leo Pumphrey, four for sure, I can remember. Four for sure that I remember.
Did you have a sense of the responsibilities of each of those men?
One did books.
bookkeeper.
Bookkeeping. Yeah. Bill Groombridge was the one that did the counting with me, and I guess he probably got the information from the cars. Yes. I don't know.
Yes, or whatever form they came in on. I guess one could think of, I don't know, manifest, is that the jargon of the trade? Or I guess it was just to say a piece of paper that tells you what's in each of the cars in this case.
Yeah, to me it was just my instructions.
Yes. I didn't know. And you were just reading it off whatever was laid in front of you and focusing on the record that you were making. I can well understand.
It was a good bit of luck for me, because the girl that worked there usually only got 2 weeks holiday, but she was going to Europe that year and asked for 6 weeks.
And so she got 2 months, did she?
She got 2 months holidays, so I got a job. It's nice.
Yes. There were friends of yours who were looking forward to enjoying a summer with you, and you were off to see.
Yes.
Admittedly, you had money and you had... How long a day did you put in?
A full day. Oh, a full day.
8 hours?
Same as a man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Walking down that pier, though, was the worst part, with fermenting grain and the...
So the office was that far, alongside the ships? It was that far down,
it's
was it
way,
actually?
Way down. It's very hard to see. I swore there was no office there.
Is there an office at the front of the elevator as well? Nope. I've been in the Richardsons.
You have to go way down the pier, yeah, and then you'll see a railing come out.
Right.
And take about 5 steps up.
And so you were very close to the action. How close were you to where the cars were being unloaded? Were they? Could you hear them?
Oh, you heard them. You heard them shunting.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering whether there will have been a... There surely wasn't a manifest on each of the cars, and so there wasn't a piece of paper that they would have pulled off each of these cars and brought in for you to type up.
Well, somebody must have brought that into me. And yes,
however it came. It'd be the simplest way to, if they attached one to each of the cars out at the local yard where it came
as
in.
As they dumped it, maybe.
Yeah, and then removed it. Oh, maybe we should, we'll talk later about others who worked there and so on and so forth. So what other men in the office would you have dealt with then? Is primarily Mr. Kubrick, did you say?
Mr. Hollingsworth was the manager.
Was the boss.
Was Bill or Bob Groombridge?
And he was the one who had the responsibility for the cars, among other things,
and
for the content.
Read back things with me. And Peter Stark. And he's the one I just ran into recently. Mm. And he was the one that told me that the other elevators had their offices downtown.
Sure.
And Leo Pumphrey, and I don't know what Leo did.
So if we were to think about the other kinds of things, as you were saying, correspondence to the headquarters in Winnipeg, I suppose.
I don't know where they went. I remember the head foreman ended up being the general manager, and he just died recently. I knew his name, and that was gone out of my head. Yeah. You probably knew him. That's no good to you, though.
Well, I glance over the obituaries regularly, daily, and every time I see someone who worked the elevators is gone, a little bit of a twinge there. Too bad we didn't catch him before before he was gone.
Yeah. So it was a good experience for me. It was nice to see what went on, because I would take my lunch break outside in spite of the smell, but to get to meet the guys and see how hard they worked.
Yes.
I know my brother, who was a millwright, he worked his butt off. He was a very hard worker. He'd come home just exhausted.
One of the interesting things about this is that they worked at the UGG and you ended up at Richardson's.
Yeah.
Not very far from each other, actually, these elevators at the foot of
my father would flip in his grave if he knew that his little asthmatic girl was working in a grain elevator.
He'd passed on by that time already.
He had passed on by then.
I see.
But he had to wear the extra overalls because I was asthmatic and I couldn't have the grain dust. And here I end up working in one. Crazy.
Of course, in those days, through the 50s and 60s, the dust, grain dust, remained in the skies of Thunder Bay. It was really only in the 70s that they really came to grips, I think. Although there was some attempt in the late 40s. We've actually interviewed people who worked with some of the dust control at various points over the years, but it was still pretty dusty, I'm sure.
Well, must have been 63 or 64. 63 when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I graduated in 65.
Right. Because your asthma won't have been helped at all by what was in the air.
Well, the strange thing is that when I was 12 years old, the doctor said I had outgrown it. But I didn't really, because I was 48 and I was in Guelph. It came back horrendously.
I see.
Yes, I'm really tired.
Yeah. So air quality remains a concern of yours.
Yes. Oh, still. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The lungs are what they should be.
Mm-hmm. But I miss so much school. My twin sister would have to go to school, get the lessons, bring them home and teach me. And I would get in just enough hours to say that they could put me ahead the next year. And when you get enough work done, then we'll pass you on to the next grade. That went on to grade 7.
I see.
And then when I was 12, the doctor says, well, you've outgrown your asthma. So,
did you agree with him?
Well, I was breathing better and I could go to school more.
Yes.
I was happy.
Yes. Well, I suppose if one were going to suffer from asthma during one's growing up years, the first 7 years would be better than the next 7, because grade school is more forgiving of absence, I suppose, than high school would have been.
Yes. I wasn't afraid then to take this job.
No.
I was at first, of course. You know, shoveling grain wasn't going to be a good idea to me. But.
Yes. Did you meet many of the grain shovelers while you were there?
No, but they don't do it by hand.
You discovered that?
Well, no, they don't do it by hand. But I thought they did. Yeah. I saw grain inspectors come and get shovels full of grain and go putting their hands through and stuff. But I never saw anybody actually shoveling mounds of grain.
They didn't give you a tour of the elevator to show you what it was all about or show you where the cars were being. You could hear them. But
I could hear them shunting, yes. Oh, yeah.
And you didn't meet the crewman from the Salties either, I don't suppose. No one. Did anyone from the ships come into the office?
A few did, with strange accents.
Yeah. Was the office quite a busy place in terms of people coming in and out?
No, not really. The head foreman came in. I wish I could think of his name.
Well, let me come back and give me a call and let me know and I'll add it to the written record.
Because he became the general manager.
Yes.
A tall, good-looking guy. Oh, I can't think of it.
The only manager at Richardson's that comes to mind for me would be Jim Simpson.
That's who it was.
Because Jim ran against me in 84.
Jim Simpson, the conservative candidate. It was.
And well, he was tall, and I'm prepared to concede he was good looking. So
when I was there, he was working out in the elevator.
Yeah, I gathered he'd worked his way up. I was interested to see that when I saw the obituary.
And he was a foreman when I was there.
He
would pop in and do something, and then he would go out.
Sure.
So, that's what you said. Oh, you got a good memory.
Well, as I say, he ran against me at 84, so I have good reason. And there were further, his father had been a doctor in Gretna, Manitoba, where my wife's family were living and so on. So there was that kind of connection back to the 30s and all of that.
And he beat you?
No, I beat him.
Oh, I guess so.
He was the conservative candidate. There were some people who thought he was going to win in 84, but I mean, that's another story. But although I might tell the story about years later, His daughter lived at that time a few some years ago, and well, I don't know whether she still does, around the corner from us. And so I was canvassing for the Coalition for Waverly Park, the Magnus in the Park campaign. And lo and behold, there was Jim Simpson at her home that day.
Oh,
and,
really?
I was needing to write up the receipt for the donation that was made to the campaign, and Jim Simpson turned around and leaned over and offered me his back to write the receipt on. And, I mean, that's a very distinctive memory of a man who,
oh, I'm so glad
whom I got to know in the context of the 84 election campaign.
You do a lot of stuff. I'm really glad you came up with this name because it's been bothering me.
Yeah.
Really bothering me.
It's a very interesting thing, this the fact that Jim Simpson had, I don't know how he became the foreman, or whether he worked as a grain handler earlier and then was promoted or not. Or,
oh, he must have. How would he become the foreman?
But then his rising to be superintendent of the of that elevator for Richardson's, I thought was very interesting.
Yeah.
In fact, what did you, you didn't have any comparative experience other than sort of knowing a little bit about UGG from your father's and brother's experiences, but how did you find Richardson's as a company, as an employer? Do you have any memories of
the
that?
The only memory I have is getting a paycheck.
mean, regularly.
I thought it was great, and getting spoiled at lunch hour was great. The only bad part was walking that pier every morning, especially if there was a salty.
The how much were you paid, if I may ask?
I don't remember.
Did you get to keep the money?
It was a minimum. Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Your father. Yeah. Oh, your father was guy. You weren't having to help to support the family because you'd been planning to enjoy the summer.
Well, I got to buy new school clothes, which is nice.
Yes.
It was a tight thing for Mom because she didn't get a lot of money, so. No. I got new school clothes.
So at this point in 63, who was still at home with your mother then? You and your sister, obviously.
Yeah. My brother Bob, my sister Eddie. And I guess that's it. So Ted's sort of gone off on her own.
So the four of you still. And of course, with the brother, this was the millwright, wasn't it?
No, that was my brother Bud,
oh.
whose name is really Lloyd, the same as my father. Yeah. But they called him Bud, so it wouldn't get confusing.
I ran across the Vester name somewhere the other day. But Lord knows where that would have been. Was your family United Church by any chance?
Pardon?
Was your family United Church?
We went there when we went to Calvin Presbyterian in Current River.
Okay,
and when it closed down, as it frequently did, no preacher, we would go over to the United.
Right. So I've been working on the historic role at St. Paul's members years back, and I'm just wondering that's where I saw the surname the other day.
Well,
a lot of Vesters. Where does the Vester family come from?
Well, my mom came right over on the boat from Ireland. My father, you know, he was born in a little town of Blenheim. And we don't know too much about him. He just wandered. When he was 13, his family died. And
this is in southern Ontario.
Yes. And he took his younger brother. He was 13. And he took his younger brother and hit the road. And then saved money, and went to Coin Electric School in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
I've still got a big plaque of his, and it's done in bronze, or copper, of his electrical degree.
Training.
Yeah, he did it
himself.
Sort of
his certificate of...
It's big. It's his master's electrical ticket, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
It's very nice.
So he studied in Chicago, then what brought him up here?
Well, I don't know what brought my mother. Well, my mom, well, my uncle lived here. No. My uncle came over here. He was a contractor, and it was my grandfather, Tom Jones, came over here as a contractor. And they stayed and they built the Black Bay Bridge, which is named after that policeman.
Yes, no.
And then he worked for Town Line Construction or something. then took the whole family back to Ireland. When my mother, she was 8 then. When she turned 18, she got on a boat and she came back here by herself. Met my dad, they got married.
Right.
And then her brother Tom, T.A. Sr., came back over.
So you're related to through your mother, to the Jones family here in the city, the construction family.
Well, you know, you can choose your friends, but you can't always choose your relatives.
It's a temptation to ask you to expand on that observation, but I suppose we should pass, should we?
Yeah. Well, mostly I have a lot of very good memories of them and activities that happened, just a few incidents that were hurtful to my mother.
That's interesting.
One memory here.
So what else do you remember about the involvement at the Richards's that summer?
Not too much more. Just the hike down the pier and then walking through the bush, you know, down by the blind home. That's where I would go in. And all the little skinny little fox that would come out looking for stuff. And I thought,
it was full of little foxes.
I bet you lots of little fox. And they were skinny. And I thought, you know, they look hungry enough to take a bite out of me.
Well, if you'd lay down on the ground, who knows?
I would run like the Dickens to the bus stop.
Yeah.
But it was a very enjoyable experience for me. The summer went very, very fast.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, I better work the whole summer. It was going to take forever. But I liked it very much. And Mr. Westbrook, when I went back to school, he says, so how was the grain shoveling? I said, well, it was really great. I loved it.
So. Now, did you bring your experience to the classroom when you came back?
No, but I told him about it.
You get a chance to tell others about the advantages of office work? Or?
No, I told him about it. I said, I told you, he wouldn't be shoveling grain. But it was very nice of him to give me a job. He knew I needed the money.
Yes.
And then he got me my job at Hammershall, too, so.
After you graduated?
Yeah. I went to Hammersholt and was there for 12 years.
Oh, yeah. So Hammersholt, was it quite new at the time?
Yes, it was brand new. Just 3 years old.
Oh, yeah. So it would be...
And it was
I'm assuming, did you complete grade 12 or grade 13?
I did grade 12.
Grade 12, so it would have been...
Commercial.
It was started in 62, then was it built in 62? I'm taking the dates.
Yes.
If you started there in 64,
yeah.
Then it would...
62.
Oh, sorry.
It was... 3 years old when I went there.
Yeah, 65. So, yeah, because you were...
And in fact, now I'm working on the 50th anniversary, or what do you call it? Reunion.
That's the joy of having been in the office. Eh?
Yes.
If they find you, they'll draft you for that kind of activity, I'm sure.
It's amazing how many kids you can remember, though.
I dare say.
Because way back, that was easier to remember than who I met yesterday.
Yes. Well, you'd probably be a resource for my looking for young people who joined St. Paul's United Church through the 60s. You probably recognize some number of those names, I imagine, because they will have been teenagers through those years. Probably going, some of them going to Hammersholt, probably.
Well, going to Lakeview, looking out the window at all of those elevators. That was a beautiful view. We were lucky, the way that building was built with that wing out there. And you look out and you see the elevators and the giant, the sleeping giant. It was really nice.
Well, this is, as you suggested earlier from the picture in the book, maybe not just one picture in the book, some sense of the importance of the elevators for Thunder Bay, and now you're giving it a scenic aspect as well.
Yes. Well, in Graves, in Current River School, that the textbook was saying how important it was to the world. It was the world's largest elevators, and they had pictures of it. And it just made me feel so proud, you know, like, Yeah, I felt nice.
I put a couple of pages about the turbine elevators to a paper for the project. We're on the brink of applying to Parks Canada to have a historic site designated for one particular elevator over on the camp. That's the one we've had to settle on. But so this gave me reason to think about the importance of the grain elevators. Of course, I'm a farmer's son from Manitoba. My dad sold his grain for many years to Patterson. So when we came to town in 78, the Patterson elevator was being knocked down. So that was a bit of a tug to see the elevator through which the grain had moved all those years going.
I heard on the news last night that the grain shipment last year was up 3%.
Yeah, I was interested to see that. Yes.
When they put Churchill, all those elevators up there, that sort of doomed us a bit.
It reduced the flow somewhat, I'm sure, although I don't know that Churchill was all that important.
Yeah.
It's interesting, when I was in Parliament, Ian and I were the MPs, of course, from here, and Rod Murphy was the MP for Churchill, and Jim Fulton was the MP for the Prince Rupert area, and Margaret Mitchell and Sven Robinson and Ian were these three of the MPs from Vancouver, and so I could think that the NDP caucus contained all the MPs for the various grain trade cities of Canada, the export locations, curiously enough. Just one of
those. What do you think made the grain fall off here?
Well, I think there were a number of reasons, and one of them is, I think, the decline in the Atlantic business, the European demand, Russian demand, and so on, and the rise in the Pacific. But there must be other factors, and of course, I was in the House of Commons, it was easy to blame the Western Grain Transportation Act, which had been passed by the Liberal government in the previous parliament, for the fact that the Crow's Nest Pass Agreement, the Crow rate had been ended and so on. But I think there were a number of factors at work. But certainly the business is not what it was.
No, but now they've got that big arm.
Yes, the crane.
And I bet you they're going to be moving windmills, or what do you call those?
Stuff for the tar sands and so on.
Big
tar. Yes.
Big stuff.
Because they have moved some of the vanes for the wind turbines, have certainly moved through the port here already out to Dorian and so on. No, I've asked various people, and so I don't give a definitive answer any longer on it. It's easy to blame the Crow rate. But certainly the trade went into decline. Some of it, I guess, is automation, too, for that matter, because Frank Mazur was a good friend of mine, my supporter, actually, in the 84 campaign, and president of Lodge 650 of the BRAC, the grain handlers. And he talked about 1,800 members of his union along in the elevators. And these days, if there are 250, 300 working in the elevators, I think we're probably doing well to have numbers that high.
I just had a flash memory. The grain growers used to have a big picnic. You know where the casino grounds are?
Yeah.
Were?
Down
on Cumberland.
Yeah.
There was a big building there. It was all stones on the outside. Well, it was crushed glass. My sister and I thought it was jewels. And it had a big veranda. And they would have races for all the kids, and then a meal inside for all the family every summer. It was great fun. We used to look after it. And some guy, Dan, an Irishman, Dan, was the one that always said, "Now get set, get ready, get going."
Yeah. Do you know? I came to town in 1978.
The building burnt down.
I see. So I think of Keskis in that area when we got down, but this was before Keskis.
No.
Oh, it's just
way down.
It's way down. Yeah. Way down near the dam, where the dam is.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm, where those grounds are.
Okay.
But there was a huge big building there. It was a big veranda, so if it rained, you could eat out there.
Okay.
But inside, it was a dining hall.
Right.
And then there was all kinds of races and things for the kids. And the elevator put that on every summer for the kids. That was fun.
It was a Fort William boy.
I see.
I was a Fort William boy. Oh. I never could get the bus all the way down the island.
So this was below the Kern River Dam, somewhere in that park area?
Yes, just above that. Coming towards this way.
Yes.
From the dam. All that green grass.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. I see. So there was a
beautiful building there, and it got burnt down.
Right. This was the building around which the Lord's Day Act excitement will have existed, I imagine. Because there was some kind of gathering place near Kern River.
They called it the casino building.
Okay, so they actually called it that, because that's what threw me off. I was thinking of the current casino downtown. Oh. No, that troubled the ministers more than 100 years ago, I think, all this activity with the tram line and so on. People could go out there and dissipate on Sundays and so on and so forth. And, the social history of the Lakehead. So that was where there would be a picnic every summer for the UGG picnic.
Yep.
Right.
And they gave us really good prizes.
Yeah. UGG was a farmer-owned company, wasn't it? Whereas Richardson, of course, was a classic grain merchant family business.
I didn't know.
You didn't get any sense of those kinds of dynamics, or you weren't aware of unions at the two places.
So didn't have that family.
No, sense. At Richardson's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, are there other aspects of the summer?
Don't think so.
Your father passed away early, sadly enough. Your brother worked there for quite a long time at the UGG?
He worked there, and he passed away earlier. He was 40 when he passed away.
Oh, good grief. Would you blame that on the conditions, the occupational health?
Well, he worked really hard, but I guess the heart problem runs in the family.
I see.
Then my third brother died away at 40.
I see, so.
And the next brother, who is the OPP, he lived in fear that he was going to die at 40, so he just lived life very well.
Much more carefully.
But he did have his first heart attack at 33.
Oh, boy.
Open heart surgery. And they fixed him up, so he's had five bypasses.
But he's still alive.
But he's still alive and kicking.
At what age now?
How old am I? Okay, I'm 65. He's 8 years older than me, so 73.
Really?
Yeah.
Comparatively speaking, he's done marvelously.
Yeah, he's done really well. Yeah. Now, the girls, there are six girls, we all have hypertension, so no heart attacks.
No.
Just friends in the family.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Owen, do you have any question that came to mind?
Nothing that is worth having on the cartridge, but I do have some questions afterwards.
Okay. Well, I think, there are questions in the questionnaire that really... I might actually ask, what would you want people to remember about or what would you like to tell people who hear this tape at some point about that summer? What was the most dramatic thing?
Don't prejudge something, because, like I did, thought, well, I never work in an elevator. Good Lord, because it was really a great time. Go and try something.
Yeah. See, what's interesting about this interview is that you're the first office worker from the grain company that we've interviewed, I think. And so we might ask you for a name or two or three after we finish this for further contacts to see whether we can talk to somebody.
Well, I don't know any others.
Oh, they're all gone.
The others worked apparently downtown in offices.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm thinking of Richardson's itself, as far as that's concerned. But
The only one took off, and I went in the next day, and then I went, and she came back. So
yes.
I never did meet her.
No. Well, I'm thinking of the men as well, for that matter. Yes, the women, of course, were scarce in the trade for a long time. I guess the grain inspectors began to... work towards gender parity sometime starting in the into the 80s, I would suspect. Mm-hmm. Well, late 70s, actually. We've interviewed some women who became grain inspectors and joined the Grain Commission in the late 70s.
They make good money.
Yeah, I dare say.
I think better than me, but I was only 16.
Yes, so. Of course, right. Well, thank you very much, Linda, for telling us about a great summer of your life. And,
it's been a pleasure.
That's
a good memory I have.
You've done pretty well. Thanks very much.
Thank you.